Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, and welcome back to the second half of Season 7 of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast, coming to you on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, and iTunes. We are back. I've had a break, though I wouldn't call it a holiday, but I certainly would call it amazing, as I spent a week in Armagh in Northern Ireland at the incredible, sensational, mind-blowing, non-stop John Hewitt International Summer School, where I was awarded a full bursary. It was a week of listening, learning, cheering and bonding. An amazing town of architectural, historical and political importance, and the Haymarket Theatre literally seeing stars bursting from its rafters with the likes of Gail McConnell, Michael McKim, Will Harris, Joseph O'Connor, Billy O'Callaghan, Maureen Boyle, Frank McGuinness, Paul Maturin, to name but a few. So many exceptional writers, poets, novelists, short story writers, politicians. There were debates, conversations, writing workshops mixed in between teas and coffees and pastries and open mics and dashes to lunches and dinners and showers and more open mics and mind-blowing live events like Kathy Carson and her epic Becoming Marvelous. I'm still unpacking it all, but thankfully no alibis. The bookstore from Belfast were there, so I managed to bring home almost every single book that they were selling to keep the memories alive. But now I'm back, and while I'm not only back on track with the podcast, I'm also closer to launching issue 3 of The Storms, because last Sunday, my issue 3 sub-editor, the exceptional Nitty Casa, came out here to the cottage in Luskin, County Dublin, and while we worked their way through home-cooked Indian food, Irish soda bread and carrot cake, we also made headway into the final lineup for this new issue, and the emails will be flying out to everyone over the coming 2 weeks. But right now, it's Saturday. Of course, that depends on when you've tuned in. This is episode 10. I'm your host, Damien B. Donnelly, and we have 5 new voices to share with you from Ireland all the way to Peru. So why don't you settle down into a cozy sofa, close your eyes and let the poet steal you away. This is Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast, and I hope you enjoy the show. First up on the podcast today, we have one half of the collaborative team behind the new Hedgehog Poetry Press pamphlet, Splashing Pink, just published last month. This writer grew up in a tiny fishing village in the north of England and has a degree in English literature from the Newcastle University. 20 years ago, she and her family moved to Cyprus, where she taught English until 2021, and since then she has been focusing on writing and has had over 40 poems published. She is a Best of the Net nominee, and her first chapbook, Birth Motes, was published by Alien Buddha Press last year. This year, she was a winner of the Write Blend Poetry Award. I'm delighted to welcome, for the first time to Eat the Storms, Annie Cowell.
Hi, I'm Annie Cowell, and I'd firstly like to say thank you to Damien Donnelly for the opportunity to share some of my poems on Eat the Storms. I'm going to read some poems from my latest book, Splashing Pink, published by Hedgehog Poetry Press. This book is a collaborative work with Sam Santo, and in essence it's a conversation between the two of us, poem by poem, in which we explore the complexities of motherhood from the perspective of two different generations. I'll begin with one about my daughter, who, when she was very young, was plagued by nightmares. There was one in particular which recurred over and over, disrupting her sleep night after night, until at last we were able to cure it. This is the poem about those dreams. It's called The Eagle Nights. An eagle got trapped in my daughter's dreams when she was small. Each night it flew through her closed window, stubbornly stuck in its wonky frame, and beat its wings against the walls of her room. It flapped in a furious frenzy of yellow eyes, talons and beak, hurling itself against the glass. Once, as my daughter struggled to escape in sleep. She ran from her room and tumbled down the stairs. Her cries tugged me to where she lay, like a crumpled tissue of snot and tears, her arms still balled around her head, imagining the bird would come. Safe in my arms, I soothed and smoothed until her sobbing stopped. Back upstairs, I pulled and pulled, fighting layers of paint and gravity, until at last, with a blast of cold night air, the window moved. It opened, yawning into the beetle blackness of the small hours, and together we freed the eagle, watched it fly away. I hail from a family of foragers, and as a child I spent hours gathering mushrooms with my dad, collecting windfalls and raiding blackberry bushes. What we found, we'd take home to Mum, who took everything we offered and transformed them into something wonderful to eat. This poem, Brambling, is a nostalgic nod to those times, about the memories our mothers make through the everyday things they do for us. Brambling. Bramble bushes tangle along the railway line near our house like clumps of unbrushed hair. All summer, insects tend to flowery garlands until come September, a jewelled coronet lures us to the dense barbs. After school, we scoot the track, scale the fence onto the narrow path beside the line. Clattering with buckets, we scour amongst bullets of green and red, hunting for ripe black garnets. We loot from the outside in, plundering berries the birds have missed, cramming our mouths with greedy fistfuls. Dark drupelets are defenceless behind leaves, an army of spikes useless against foraging fingers. We delve deep into musty hearts, brushing aside cobwebs and fat moths, wings too gluey with seeds and juice to flutter far. Time runs away in the lengthening shadows, until at last we notice the first pinch of an autumn dusk and stagger home scratched and bloodied with purple. Our childhoods were in those bramble buckets. Mum cooked it into pies and crumbles, jammed and jarred it into memories we could preserve forever. The final poem I'm going to read is actually the last one in the pamphlet, and it's about Mother Nature and how we rely on her to always make things right in the end. This one is called When the Sun Fell Out of the Sky. A dock leaf eases a sting just as mint leaves soothe a tummy ache. My mother taught me this, just as hers taught her before. My children know it will rain when the cows in the field lie down. They can smell the rain approaching. I taught them that. When the sun fell out of the sky, a rainbow appeared to staunch the blue from bleeding. A shaft of sunlight sent by Gaia was a gift of healing, splashing the world with pink. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Splashing Pink is available through the wonderful Hedgehog Poetry Press, or directly from myself or Sam, if you'd like to read more.
Next up is the other half of that duo who wrote the latest Hedgehog Poetry Press pamphlet, Splashing Pink. This time we're off to Durham, though staying in the United Kingdom, for a writer who won the Sherow Poetry Prize in 2020 and the 12th First Writer International Poetry Prize. Her short story, If No One Speaks, was published by Alien Buddha Press, and she's had poems in many international journals, including Stark Nights, The Lake, and The North. I'm delighted to welcome to Into the Storms for the first time, Sam Santo.
Hi, I'm Sam Santo. I'm a poet and short story writer and novelist from Durham, the one in the UK. And I am going to read to you three poems from my upcoming collaboration with Annie Cowell called Splashing Pink, which is available from Hedgehog Press. The first is Nightlight. In the nightlight, I watch your eyelashes lengthen. You snuffle and squeak as you feed my little pig. You soberly suck my small life locked into your rosebud lips. You are my first responsibility, a watery sun I revolve around. I teeter on the edges of myself, moontide milk flowing from my bruised body. Life ended and started when you began, pushed out from under my skin, but still in. We're marooned together in the soft dark. You're eating imperative, half violent. As I tiptoe with you to your basket, a bird's yellow song creeps into the room, tangling with your sounds. Mules, snores, grunts, snarfles, then quick, sharp breaths as you roam dream country. Some unknown evil makes you wake and wail. I swoop. Your appalled mouth is a door shoved open, cries spilling out, echoing through time. Every mother runs to that red sound. I breast bury your sad, indignant vowels, the night growing around us. Days tighten. We are in limbo, suspended between lives, waiting for the people we will be. I still expect you to vanish at night, my refugee, so new to this country. The fact of you is thin and silvery, but you're more important to me than me. The next one is called Looking Back. When my son was in year two, I moved him from almost everything he knew to a city which had been a holiday, a school neither of us had been to before we climbed the steep hill that April Monday. I pointed out a board, posters advertising holiday clubs, a bake sale, an Easter bunny hunt. That's the past, he said, face fresh page blank and white. We stood, an island of silence in the playground, hands interlocked like the Duplo blocks we used to play with on days at home that I thought would never end. Filled to the margins with worry, I held his clammy hand, his other wobbling the tooth that hung by a thread. Children moving around us, fighting, screeching, laughing. Finally, a woman with a lanyard marched from a red brick building. On hearing my son was new, her face flowered open and she crouched to speak to him, ushering him away as my heart disappeared in quicksand. Love you, I called, hand held in a wave that was also a stop sign. He looked back once and then was gone. I lingered on, a neon-jacketed breakfast club, Noah's arcing past, women with double buggies, clusters of chatting mothers, before drifting away like white-grey cloud from the sun. 3 years on, my son will only hold my hand to cross a road and never looks back when he goes into school. I do. And the last is A Trail of Two Cities, which, as well as being published in Splashing Pink, was also published in The North last year. A Trail of Two Cities. Trailing between two cities, not here, nor there, not alone, nor unalone. Everything the same, everything changed. No tongue, spent, fleeting feelings. A palimpsest of present, overpassed. We pass. The sunset gilded on municipal windows, hard as the gold of my ring. A ring road by the angel that never flies. Car headlights, tears stuck in eyes. Engines howl and hoot home. Our driver pauses, then starts, like an almost dead heart. That's the pub where we talked about leaving, when the kids on this bus were in prams, but only I went, and on and on. The town between the cities, salons, a bleary glitter, a stammering of stores that will last as long as love. Look up and above, you said. That's where the beauty is. All the time you knew. The patchwork elephant outside the Indian restaurant, fields stretch out their hands that we would never last. Twilight wordlessly edging in, a street lamp showing an old man in neon, smoking at a stand. I stand. Thank the driver. Clamber down. Back. Not where I came from. The place that is home again. For the first time. My son waits. Into my arms to fly. Thank you.
My next guest is not only a fantastic returning stormer, but is also the author of our collection of the week called Cactusland, which has just been released by her own publishing company, Atomic Bohemian. Her previous books include Blame It On Me, All That Glistens, and The Birds, The Rabbits and Trees, and they're all available with Broken Sleep Books. She is the author of the mini pamphlet with Caleb Nichols called Whisper Network, and in between all of this runs Cape Magazine. And all this while working on a science fiction novel for her PhD. From North Wales, please give it up in the privacy of your own home for the winner of the Exeter 2016 Novel Prize and the two-time Pushcart Prize nominee, Bryony Collins.
Hi, my name is Bryony Collins. I'm a writer based in North Wales. I've had 5 books published, 3 with Broken Sleep, called Blame It On Me, All That Glisters, and The Birds, The Rabbits, The Trees. I also have a mini pamphlet called Whisper Network, which I co-wrote with my friend Caleb Nichols for Bangor University. And my most recent release, Cactus Land, came out with my own press, Atomic Bohemian, on July 15th, 2023. Now, Cactus Land was, well, it was quite a feat for me because I, of course, wrote the poems and then produced the book and saw it all the way through the entire process out into other people's hands, which I haven't experienced anything like that before. And so we're really excited at Atomic Bohemian to begin working with other writers to take them on a similar journey and produce their own books too. It's very exciting, but enough of that. I'm going to read a little now from Cactus Land out with Atomic Bohemian, which is my latest foray into poetry. Now, I'm going to begin with the eponymous poem. So this is Cactus Land. Someone once described me as a blossoming of thorns. Girls are flowers all my life. You seek gardens, I disappoint. I found the cactus land becoming me. Flora only tattoos to thorny flesh. I don't burgeon to please, don't draw the sunlight from your smile, but choose instead to multiply in spears, to save myself from touch. What soft minutes arrive, tell me, can I prick and be wanted? Can I pierce and be loved? As a sort of, I don't know if it's a fun fact, but as a fun fact, the person who described me as a blossoming of thorns is actually my business partner at Atomic Bohemian, Aaron Farrell. So there we go. The next piece I'm going to read is a prose poem called Animal. Now, these poems in Cactus Land came out of what I can only describe as a COVID romance, and involved a lot of conversation with a specific person. And I think this poem really captures that conversational element at play in this book. So, this is Animal. Some people cherish their pain, he says. And I'm glad he's not here to watch the tears slip out. That these are only unexpected texts pinging in the night. We watch Bukowski videos together, and I say he had a beautiful soul. No, he says, he had an animal soul, dirty and wild. But aren't all the worthwhile things in the world that way? Do you have an animal soul? He asks. And I think about lying, think about saying I don't, that I never turn my head up to the sky as it rains, imagine my face melting away, standing outside cemetery gates and smiling about home. How those gates will open for me one day, and I will tread the black earth, set my flesh like a fossil in the ground, all ammonite fists and no eyes. How I will drip down through sediment to disappear forever. How the gates will close after me, and no others will part. Do you have an animal soul? He asks. And I say we all do, but only some are brave enough to admit it. Now, what I'm going to read next is, it was sort of part of my master's degree, and as such, it was a little bit of a experimentation. My supervisor at the time was urging me to be less formulaic with what I wrote. This piece is called Unholy. Woman, you say, the curve of you is unholy. And my spine is a tsunami, a 30-foot sweep of godless black water. Fibonacci's tide rising and riding to eclipse the horizon. Unholy like a fist damming into drywall, plaster dusting knuckles and finger spirals, paint chips kissing skin, nails bowing into the heart line of a palm. Like hot breath coiling in the air, vapour feathering itself on the chill of the city, the wrap and tangle of frost from the mist of my lungs. Woman, you say, the curve of you is unholy. And my toes curl, I'm burning alive. How flames twist around limbs, that I would tear my soul from the embers for you, if you'd take it, if you'd take it. I believe I have time for just one more piece, and I think I'm going to land on Holocene, named for his favourite song. Upon waking, I stretch, crack the base of my spine, my fluids run thin. Vitality depletes between bones. He sleeps with his nose squashed into a pillow. What an ugly thing, I think, to be so sure of sanity. The sun doesn't visit us here, in this flat gone noon, the austere sax filter of the day already dying. We are a moment, a lungful of our lives. Well, I have been Bryony Collins reading from Cactus Land out with Atomic Bohemian. And thank you to Damien for having me back on Eat the Storms. It is always a pleasure. And that's all from me. Thank you.
Next up, we have another returning guest stormer to the podcast. And you know how much I love it when a poet wants to return and read again here at Eat the Storms. This poet lived for 34 years in Madrid, but is now back in Newcastle in the United Kingdom. He started writing poems in 2013. And since then, he's published over 120 poems in a wide range of international journals. I'm delighted to hand you over once again to the excellent poetic stylings of Glenn Hubbard.
The Barbers of Treblinka is a poem about a man called Abraham Bomba, a Polish Jew who was a barber and was taken to Treblinka extermination camp, where he was made a member of a Sonderkommando, which was a group of prisoners who were given literally a stay of execution because they offered certain skills which the SS valued. In this case, he could cut hair which the Nazis then used as a component in delay action bombs. There's one German word in it called Der Himmelweg, that means the way to heaven, and it was the name given by the SS at Treblinka to the fenced off path that led from the undressing barracks to the gas chambers. The first and third stanzas are set in Abraham's barbershop in Israel after the war, where he's being filmed by Claude Lanzmann, who made the documentary Shoah. The second and final stanzas are set in Treblinka itself. The Barbers of Treblinka. Abraham Bomba is in his barber's shop, a split mirror, the snip, snip of his scissors. He is taking care, making endless little touches to a customer's hair, as if he's clipping the air. Claude Lanzmann is asking questions. Those waiting sit and listen. New arrivals stand and stare. They look confused, as if they should not be there. Inside the chamber in Treblinka, Abe and 15 barbers waited for the naked women and children to ascend their Himmelweg. No mirrors, just combs and scissors. Hair for delay action bombs. A time limit of 2 minutes per woman. No scalping, as if sprucing, but most knew, saw through the ruse. Neighbours and friends joined the queue. What could you tell them? Now the wife and sister of one of the 16. Abe makes a sharp gesture in the air, as if to dismiss a thought becoming solid there. He snips, cannot speak, tongue rolling around in his mouth, apparently swollen. To prevent the speaking of the unspeakable, he pauses, looks away as if something were unfolding on a screen behind the eyes that he will dry on his blue barber's towel. He needs the filming to stop, but Lanzmann pleads. They agreed. The story must be told. Abe waits in a semi-hush, snips, stops, stares, tells them to continue. The barber is under the gaze of the guards. If he answers their questions about their future, he will die. They are already dead. He steals a minute for hugs and kisses, raises his scissors. This poem is dedicated to Philip Müller. He was also a member of a Sonderkommando and miraculously survived the experience in Auschwitz. The poem is about the extermination of the Terezin families. These were families that came up to, were taken up to Auschwitz from near Prague. They were treated especially better than most inmates. It's not really clear why. They believed that they were going to survive the experience, and on March 8th, 1944, the title of the poem, they believed they were getting onto trucks going to a place called Heidelberg to work in industrial production. In fact, that wasn't the case. March the 8th, 1944. After you'd seen how the Terezin families got down from trucks that had not taken the turn for Heidelberg, how the clubs and whips confirmed their error and their eyes the true nature of the International Information Centre, how some confronted Obersturmführer Schwarzhuber, how they beat them, the SS, how most would not get undressed, how they all sang the Hatikva. You followed them into the chamber to die. Why continue living, trying to survive in the Sonderkommando? But some women waiting to be gassed said no. Your deed would mean nothing. You must live and be heard. And I hear you now, Philip, as once again I watch you telling it through tears. I picture the women gathering round, but don't have enough imagination, can't hold in my head a nobility which would not fit inside a vaulted cathedral.
My final guest today on Each of the Storms is a multidisciplinary artist and a bilingual poet originally from Peru but living in Ireland, whose books include Nothing Belongs to Everyone and Rain, Love, Death Poets, Lluvia, Amor, Muerte, Poetas, which was published in Spain last year and will be published by Salmon Poetry at the Ennistimon Book Festival on Saturday the 26th of August at 4 p.m. if you're in the area. She is the recipient of the 2023 Primo Nuevo Ateneo Online, which recognises the work of authors who have written important work of great literary value and who strive to contribute to new forms of cultural diffusion to reach the reading public. She has received awards from the Mayo County Council Arts Section and Culture Ireland and is currently working on a new collection of poetry that will be with us in 2024. Joining us for the first time on Eat the Storms, but hopefully not the last, I'm delighted to welcome Isabella Breisombrio Hoban.
A very special thank you to Damien Donnelly of Eat the Storms and for your contribution to poetry. And thank you also to those of you listening. Listening is a great gift, especially to us poets. It is a complete honor, and I am so delighted to be able to be part of this abundance of poetry that is It the Storms. And I am going to begin with a very short poem from my latest book called Rain, Love, Death, Poets. The poem is called Horizon. Good afternoon from a night here, with a horizon that wants to stand up and walk towards the same sky that it divides. Because I'm a bilingual poet, English and Spanish, I'm just going to read that poem in Spanish as well. Horizonte. Buenas tardes de una noche aquí, con un horizonte que quiere pararse y caminar hacia ese mismo cielo que divide. I am going to continue now with a poem called The Oak Tree. You saw me during the end of the last chapter, singing to an oak tree, dreaming to a dream, living slowly without turning my back. And suddenly, a sharp noise, narrowly a lucky escape. If you spare me, I will take refuge in a corner, spend the rest of my years undercover, cornered, squinting, secretly watching others. I will peek through the small opening and tell you what's happening underneath the staircase. Who walked into the room? Who is pretending? I will conduct an open excavation for you, and then, in self-defense, become an altered landscape in which a butterfly imitates your trembling breath with the movement of her wings. I live in County Mayo in Castlebar near a lake called Loch Lanna, and there's many rivers as well. And the next poem that I'm going to read is called Circle. And this is a poem that I actually wrote around those lakes and rivers, which influence a lot. I notice water is something that's very, very present in a lot of my writing. Circle. That circle that appeared on the water and that I drew with a tree branch on the earth had a charged atmosphere, because it is the same branch I stumbled upon while walking, a stumble that made me sit and look at the river. This next poem is called Icon. Icon. I want to be another kind of alleviation, an icon of nothing, with no ignition. Like so many things in life, I don't meet my own criteria, trying avoidance as a life strategy, seeking state-of-the-art relief. In theory, yes. In practice, we are not. Clouds on the sky at sunset, floating towards terraces underneath forgotten trees. This next poem is called Time. Time. Sometimes water shows us the sky. Sometimes eternity has an intrinsic clock. Sometimes there are no fences and I walk through. Sometimes the sun melts the snow. Sometimes the cold is poetic. Sometimes a bird sings until sometimes there is a way. Sometimes there is another way. Sometimes there is no way to tell. Sometimes the air carries a feather like a delivery of presents. Sometimes it's all the time. Sometimes all is a while. Sometimes the air carries a wavering leaf. Sometimes all is a sigh of absence. Sometimes all is an appearance of all. Sometimes the air carries an insinuation. Sometimes there is. Sometimes there is not. Sometimes a rose is a scented parting. Sometimes only sometimes. Sometimes the wind thinks about a whisper. Sometimes there are times, and again, below zero. And I am going to finish my reading with a poem, continuing on the theme of water, with a poem about rain. I find rain a very helpful companion to writing. This poem is called The Love of Rain. Rain is the most direct way to the sky. A liquid closeness that is felt here and there. A cold or warm intimacy, falling hard or soft, drawing stains, drenching, and then disappearing. I ask the evaporation to take back to the clouds a message from my essence, which is never cold and always warm, despite the moon's dryness, despite the conviction that something has flown, underestimating the distance, underestimating the sensitivity of the situation, underestimating a drop.
Now, that was it for all my guests on today's show. So as usual, it leaves you a little bit of time to share some of my own poetry with you. And as it's the month of August, and we are, or at least I am counting down to my birthday, I am also counting down to the birthday of my first full poetry collection, Enough, which was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press on the 29th of August last year. So I'm going to leave you with a few poems from that collection. And once again, thank you so much to Mark Davidson, head of Hedgehog Poetry Press, for looking after all his hoglets down on the Hedgehog Poetry Press's farm. This first poem is set at the end of the 1990s. It was my first foray onto the streets of Paris. And this poem is about myself and my flatmates, both of us trying to explore our connection to the city, to ourselves, and also, I suppose, to each other. This is called Kids on the Cobbles. You wore a fur coat, a found object from the 70s, the 90s had yet to distinguish as disgusting. Funny, you, vegetarian before we knew how to swallow a full vegan and virginal too. Tumbling from tight tops and velveteen bottoms that left pals panting while you fingered white keys in beatnik basements that hardly held us and then toppled later across the cobbles while deciphering all the curious questions of who you were, who I thought I was, and who we'd never be to each other. I wonder, from this far side of that ocean that holds no trace of any way back in its makeup, if our whispers are still there. Right bank, behind the gay bars that thrilled us on Saturdays and those Jewish bakeries that filled us on Sunday mornings after waking up alone. There are many things I wanted to say and didn't, and other things that I never got to take back. But we were just kids, too young to see how we lived in a city where every little thing that happened was already set in stone. This next one is 20 years later, when I returned to Paris at the age of 40, sitting in parks, now well acquainted with the tunes of Joni Mitchell and her influence taking flight, and I suppose still looking back at that first foray and those first connections made. This is called Boy So Blue. In a park in Paris, France, kids outgrow the trees they're climbing and the birds busy their feathers in flights of unassuming freedom. In between the battle and bustle, I fall up through stilled thoughts as someone tickles strings on chords too distant to be defined. Hunting for the key to harmony, probably, and guarding their guitar from the bright lights of the starless sky as if they know already how celebrity will one day come down and cripple all their creativity. A blackbird comes to call, looking for crumbs cast off, rummaging for a refuge like we all do. Desperate for a distraction from the circling sun and shining skins blistering under the bland and all its blunder. Sitting in a park in Paris, France, torn in a trance from 22 to 42, recalling how I first found favour in exploring you. Two rooms, no light, we became the masters of the marais. Two simple singletons, ceaselessly sinking innocence into the marshes, cavorting over its cobbles, courting kisses of single sparks, climbing our way up and over the losses we taught at the time to be insurmountable disasters. But they were just dances, like the tiny birds and climbing kids. Prances we perform up and under, over and through. We are all birds flirting with honesty and invisibility under a sweltering sun, sometimes recalled, sometimes forgotten before begun. Sitting here in a park in Paris, France, trying to understand the melodies and to comprehend the chords forged in the flesh of the boy so blue. This final poem is the last poem in the collection and is called A Still Life of Sentimental on a Wall. Memory is a shot of stillness, sealed behind a lens. A souvenir of something unseen until frozen in frame. Some see this as a season of rust, of ruin and running. But for me, there is a freedom in this fall. I'll hang you on other walls, in other seasons. You'll hear me sing other songs to other suitors. It doesn't mean we never had a summer, only that our spring was too short to be anything other than sentimental. Well, I hope you've had a good evening, good afternoon, or possibly even a good morning with us here at Eat the Storms, a poetry podcast, as we've now reached the end of episode 10. My name is Damien B. Donnelly. I've been your host and producer, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in and sticking with us over the course of these 7 seasons. And of course, it would not be possible without our glorious guests. And we've had over 575 international guests on the podcast. And today, adding to that number, have been author of the Collection of the Week, Bryony Collins, Sam Santo and Annie Cole, Glenn Hubbard, and from Peru, though living here in Ireland, Isabella Besombrio Hoban. For details on all of my guests, you can head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, click on the podcast section called Listen to the Podcast, and there you will find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 10, season 7, and in that blog post there is a listing of bios, social media handles, photos, and where you can find these collections and purchase them for your own bookshelf. So, as I said at the beginning of this episode, we are working our way down to issue 3 of The Storms, our Journal of Poetry, Prose and Visual Arts. And on our social media at the moment, on all of our platforms, we are celebrating the stars of issue 2, our last issue. Because again, like the podcast, the journal would be nothing without its amazing contributors. And I wish we could publish every single word, every single visual piece that were sent. But of course, space and money mean that is not possible. But thank you so much for submitting. Thank you for understanding if you were not accepted, and we really hope that you will submit again to the next issue. It really is an honour to publish all your work. Now, as we started, I'm also ending the same way, talking about the John Hewitt International Literature Festival. I want to say a huge thank you to everyone involved in County Armagh. I received a bursary award this year, and I would suggest to any of you budding writers out there, it is well worth the application. So keep an eye out for that opening up again next year. And in terms of the John Hewitt International Summer School, we had the incredible Niall McArdle and Jay Rafferty, who were our sensational guardians for the entire week. So a huge thank you to the both of them for their energy, their enthusiasm. We would have been lost without you both. Now that's it from me here on the podcast. Tune in again next week for another diverse episode of Exceptional International Voices in Poetry. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and until we meet again, make sure that you stay bloody poetic!
Oh, thank you.